verse is it? 20?
20, but we have to do our prayer first. Om Partaya Pratibodhitam Pagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanisantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvaishinim. So, verse 20. Gunane tanatityatrim. Gunane tanatityatrim. Dehi dehasamudbhavan. Dehi dehasamudbhavan. Janma mrityu jara dukhair. Janma mrityu jara dukhair. Should we say like this? Janma mrityu jara dukhaihi. Janma mrityu jara dukhaihi. Vimukto mritamashnite, vimukto mritamashnite. Gunan, etan, atitya, trin, dehi, deha, samudbhavan. Janma, mrityu, jara, dukkaihi, vimuktaha, amritam. Ashnite. In the previous verse, is that we did last week is actually, it's a really big verse. This verse ends at mad bhavam saha adigachati. He attains me, my being. And through adigachati, through knowledge, he gains me. So in the first verse, na anyam gunebhyah kartaram yada drashta anupashati means that when the drashta, the seer, the jiva, right, the one who says, I am the conscious being, the experiencer, the one who experiences everything, when that person recognizes anupashati, that anupashati, when he sees, anu means after, when he sees after what? It sees after having been exposed to this teaching, when that one sees, and sees means understands, knows directly, immediately. Because when I use the word to see, seeing is always an immediate experience. The object of my sight is something that's immediately experienced by me. Whereas with the other means of knowledge, like say for inference, for instance, If I see smoke, I infer fire, but I'm not directly experiencing the fire. So sometimes we use the verb to see in the sense of understanding, but that understanding has this aparoksha, this what we call aparoksha, or it's immediately direct, immediate recognition, or what is sakshat. Sakshat means something that's appeared right in front of you. So here he says, when the drashta actually sees, that the sees means recognizes it fully, not indirectly, not like an indirect knowledge or not like a theory, but actually recognizes the truth of this. He sees that the karta, the one who is the doer, I do this, I do that, I see this, I see that, the one who takes on these actions of doership and of knowership and of enjoyership, when he sees that all of that activity is nothing other than the gunas. It is only really the sattva, rajas, and tamas. Three gunas, the maya upadi. That's when we say the three gunas, what the maya upadi, what is maya, is sattva, rajas, and tamas. There's no maya other than sattva, rajas, and tamas. And so when he might as well say that the kartritvam, this doership, only belongs to Maya. But he says it only belongs to the gunas. It is, the karta is not other than the three gunas. So if we look at that, the sattva guna, is responsible for the mind and the sense organs. Just from the standpoint of the jiva, okay? The sattva guna is responsible for the mind and the sense organs. So whatever your mind is thinking, whatever emotions are taking place, whatever is going on in the mind, that is the gunas. That is the sattva guna. In terms of the pranas, the organs of action and the pranas, that is rajas. That's the rajoguna. So whatever is going on in your digestive tract, whatever is going on in the prana, that's rajas. That's the rajoguna. Whatever going on in the physical body is the tamoguna, in the tamas. Tamas, the sukshma tamas, the subtle tamas guna, which has undergone panchikarana, becoming fivefold, is what is responsible for this physical body. And so now, if you start, so this is Maya, right? We're breaking Maya down into sattva, rajas, and tamas. So now we can say, whatever goes on in the mind is the sattva guna, whatever is going on in the prana, in the organs of act, in the organs of action is the raja guna, this physical body is the tama, is tamas, okay? Having gone through this process of becoming fivefold. Then you can also become a little bit more sophisticated with it, and we look at the sattva, rajas, and tamas as qualities. And so my mind, even though it's the sattva guna, when the mind is agitated, it's being influenced by rajas. So you would say my mind, the mind, which is sattva, is influenced now by rajas. When I'm irritated or agitated, my mind, the mind, which is sattva, is influenced by tamas. That's why I'm so sleepy and dull and yawning. Okay? So what Krishna is trying to do here is just provide a way of relating to all of your experience in terms of sattva, rajas, and tamas, in terms of maya, to help you differentiate these gunas, the maya, from your own presence, from your own being. If I say my mind is agitated, I am agitated. Say, my mind is agitated, I am agitated. That's the samsara. That's the ahankara. But what if you just see the agitation passing through your mind as rajas? The mind has rajas. The mind has tamas. You know, the mind has sattva. It's very clear. We're just looking at these as attributes. Then, instead of saying, I am rajas, I am agitated, I say the mind is influenced by the rajoguna. That's what he's saying here. So the one who sees that the kartritvam, all of this doership and knowership and enjoyership is really nothing but maya, it's nothing but the gunas, having seen that clearly, and in the seeing of that clearly, then vaiti, he knows the param, that which is beyond the gunas. And knowing that which is beyond the gunas, seeing clearly that the doership, seership, enjoyership, all of these are just play of the gunas, and having differentiated what is beyond the gunas, then that person, that drashta, attains my being. Attains my being not by in a sense of becoming, but in the sense of viveka. Because once I differentiate my being from the three gunas, I'm actually differentiating my being from everything that can be objectified, because the three gunas comprise the whole Maya Upadi. This whole Maya, this whole creation can be broken into sattva, rajas, and tamas. And so once I differentiate me, the conscious being that I am, from these three gunas, then who is this me? This me that is left, the one that's been differentiated, Krishna says, that is me. This one that is left, this one that's been differentiated, that is Madhbhava, that is my being. So the one who has differentiated the seer, the jiva, who has differentiated the self, param means that which is free of, above all of these three gunas, that one who's been differentiated from the kartritvam, from the three gunas, that is me. So that's when he says this, Madhavam saha saha adigachate. He gains me. He attains me. Not in any time of reaching, but he attains me in terms of knowledge, because until that attainment, until that recognition has taken place, the identification is totally with the gunas. You know? And so then I am this. I am happy, I am sad, I am rajasic, I am this physical body, I am my mind, I am the subtle body transmigrating. All of these are gunas. So until he's differentiated, there's no possibility of saying that person is me. Is my Krishna saying that? The one that me, that remains having differentiated from the gunas, that is my being. That's who I am. So who you are is who I am. That is the Mahavakya. So now he says, he goes on with this. He says, gunan etan atitya trin. Trin means three. So gunan is accusative plural. These gunas. Etan, accusative plural, these gunas. Gunan, etan, trin. These three gunas. Atitya. Having, what's the word? Having gone beyond, having differentiated, right? Been separated from. Gunan, etan, atitya. Having surpassed, having gone beyond these three gunas. The three gunas, which are deha samud bhavan. See that on ending again? That's nominative plural. You see, you've got gunan, etan, trin, and samud bhavan. All accusative plural. Sorry, I said nominative. So what this says is the dehi means the one who has a body. So this conscious being, me, who is indwelling in this body. So deha means body, okay? Dehin, that in affix, means the one who has, whatever the noun is. There's the deha, the dehin, is the one who has a body. Dehi is the nominative singular. So the embodied, one who is embodied, so that one, having gone beyond the three gunas, these three gunas, setra, rajas, and tamas, which are deha, samud, bhavan, responsible for the body. They are the cause of the body. They're the three gunas, when they come into manifestation, the sukshma, the three gunas on the sukshma level are the antakarna, the subtle body, which is made up, and those that reflect consciousness, those three gunas, the setra gunas, are the mind, the sense organs, the rajo gunas are the organs of action and the prana, vital force, and the tamo guna are those gunas that have gone through panchikarna to make this physical body. So the one who is indwelling this body, we have to go like this, the one who is indwelling this body, and therefore indwelling the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, and indwelling the stula sharira, the physical body, this one who has this, the one who is abiding in the subtle body, has a subtle body, the one who, and the subtle body is abiding in this physical body. So that dehi, having gone beyond these three gunas, which are deha samud bhavan, the cause of these bodies, sukshma and stula, the subtle and the causal, the one who's responsible for them. Then he says, janma mrityu jara dukaihi vimuktaha amritam ashnate. He says that dehi becomes vimuktaha, liberated. Muktaha means freed. Vimuktaha means completely freed, separated from. Completely freed. From what? Now, the from what or by what? The vimukta governs the instrumental case, but in English we'd say from what. He is vimuktaha from something. But this is in the instrumental plural, so, and it's a compound. It's made of all of these words. He is freed from what? Janma, birth, mrityu, death, jara, old age, dukkha, sorrow. So janma, mrityu, and jara are physical. He's freed from the birth, death, old age of the body. Remember, we have this term, Swamiji uses this term all of the time, called the shed bhava vikaras. The shed bhava vikaras. Vikara means modification. Shed means six. The six shed bhava, the six vikaras, modifications of being, of anything that comes into being, is born, goes through these six modifications. The first one is the person is born. That's jayate. First modification, he's born. Asti, now that he's born, he exists. This little baby exists. Then this baby starts to grow, vardate. So we've got jayate, he's born. Asti, now he is. Then vardate, he grows. Then viparinamate, he transforms, goes through puberty, the change of life and all of this. Then apakshiyate, he decays, becomes old, and then vinashati, he dies. These are the shed bhava vikars. These are the six modifications that all beings go through that are born. So a lot of times, instead of saying all six, they will just go, like here, janma mrityu, birth and death. Because birth is the first, death is the last. But between birth and death, all of the others are fine. So, okay, the little baby's born. Now he is. That's okay. Now he's growing. That's okay. Now he goes through puberty. Or she, that's okay. But then the apakshiyate, the growing old, that's not so okay. Right? So he throws that in. The janma, there's birth and death. And between, and in that series, there's this jara, there's this apakshiyate, this growing old, decaying. And then, then there's death. So this is what the jiva goes through. Anyone who's taken a body is going to go through this process, birth, death, and then growing old, decaying, dying, getting, and in the middle you can throw so many other things in, getting sick, etc. So that takes care of the body. He only says one thing for the subtle body, dukkha. Dukkha. Swamiji in his commentary goes, he says this, he always says one thing, dukkha, because really there's just dukkha, dukkha, dukkha with a little bits of sukha thrown in. But another way of realizing it is dukkha is what is the problem. When sukha is there, you're as though liberated, and everything in those moments of sukha, in those moments of joy, in those moments of love, in those moments of all is well with me, at that time we don't want anything to be different. The problem is that you only have a second or a millisecond or maybe a few seconds of being lost in that ananda without the realization that it will come to an end, which is the beginning of the dukkha. The beginning of the dukkha is that moment of realization that the sukha is time-bound or that the sukha can be impinged upon. So he just says dukkha, because dukkha is what we would like to be free of, and not free of temporarily. This is the thing when we're talking about moksha. I want to be liberated. This is, they use this example with moksha. I want to be liberated without the fear of becoming unliberated. Liberated means I would like to be whole and complete without fear. I would like to, so, and then you can go even farther. I can, so all these words, I would like to be whole and complete and not without fear. You might as well just say, I would like to be free of fear. Abhayam. But moksha is abhayam. There is no fear. It means the being that I am is in no way threatened. Dukkha is a threat. Death is a threat. Disease is a threat. The vikaras are a threat. Vikara means modification is a threat, because I can't relax in what I am. That state of abhayam is moksha. You know, it is absolute. Moksha is absolute freedom from fear. And that is ananda. My being is limitless. The limitlessness of my being, free from change, free from fear. So here, what he says is that one who has surpassed, gone beyond these three gunas, which are responsible, that dehi, this one, this conscious being who is as though indwelling inside, the one who as though has this body, mind, and sense organs, when that one recognizes the freedom from these three gunas, that one is simultaneously freed from janma, mrityu, jara, dukkha, from birth, death, old age and suffering sorrow. And being freed in that way, in that being freed, amritam ashnute, he attains or she attains amritam, freedom from death. Freedom from death is freedom from change. Freedom from the vikara. Freedom from death is freedom from any type of change. And that the one that is free of change is only the Atma. It's only the self. And it's only the self that is free from the gunas. Because everything that exists within the creation, space, air, fire, water, earth, we say, when the maya, when the sattva, rajas, and tamas projects, if we look at the universe as cyclical, the universe when it's in unmanifest condition, all of these three gunas are dormant, they're in what they call sama avastha, they're in unmanifest condition. When they project, when the universe projects, when the maya projects, when the three gunas project, the five elements project. The universe projects in the form of the five elements, space, air, fire, water, earth. But because maya is sattva, rajas, and tamas, space, air, fire, water, and earth has a sattvic aspect, rajas aspect, and tamas aspect. And so the sattva aspect of all of the elements are responsible for the five sense organs. And put the sattva aspect of the five elements together and you have the mind. The rajas aspect of all of the five elements are responsible for the five pranas and the five organs of action. The tamas aspect of all of the five elements that go through this process of becoming fivefold is responsible for the elements that we experience through our sense organs. So I could go on for hours about this, and I will later, but not we don't need to do that right now. But the idea here is that our whole experience from knower to known, because the mind and the sense organs themselves are gunas. What is responsible for your knowership, for the subject-object relationship, the knower-known relationship? What is responsible for your activity? All of these things are only the gunas, right? And so if I identify with my mind, I'm identifying with the gunas. If I identify with sense organs, I'm identifying with the gunas. With this body, identifying with the gunas. What if I have differentiated my being from sattva, rajas, and tamas? I have differentiated my being from the entire creation. Because maya is sattva, rajas, and tamas. Space, air, fire, water, earth is sattva, rajas, and tamas. Know or known, the seer seeing, hearer heard, all of this subject-object relationship, where there's a subject and an object, this duality is sattva, rajas, and tamas. And so if I am differentiated, once I differentiated myself from that, then this me is amritam. It isn't subject to death because it's not subject to duality. And if I'm not subject to duality, if I'm not objectifiable, which I would need to be identified with a guna to be objective, to be an object in the world, I have to have an identification with a guna. If I have differentiated my being from these gunas, then my being isn't subject to change or objectification and is free from death. All death takes place within maya, within the gunas, within duality, within change. Consciousness is not an object within or are not identified with these gunas, and it doesn't go through any change whatsoever. When the ahankara really is the I notion, that when you say I am, the mind says I am. When that I am thought, that I am vritti, right, lands on any guna, it lands on my mind or my sense organs or my body, wherever it lands on, if it lands on anything, then the ahankara is born. That's what the ahankara is. The ahankara, the I notion, must land on an upadhi. It must say, I am the body, or I am a quality of the body. I am the body, or I am a woman, or I am fat, or I am tall, or I am young, or I am old, whatever. Whatever the quality of this is, the ahankara, if I say, I am that, or I say, I am the whole thing, the body, that's the ahankara. If I say, I am my mind, I am the subtle body, or I am my mind, ahankara. If I say I am smart or stupid or dull, you know, ahankara, a quality. I identify with my eyes. I am a seer. I have 20/20 vision. Now I become my eyes that have 20/20 vision, so I identify myself as having these instruments, ahankara. What about when the, for the mind, when you, as you have knowledge, what happens to the ahankara? The ahankara really becomes what we call mitya, because you can have a sense of being the body, but my identity, my self-identity is not with the body, and it's not with my thoughts, and it's not with my emotions, it's with me. So now what happens, as this differentiation becomes real for you, becomes something that you actually recognize, when you say I, it doesn't land on your thoughts. It doesn't land on your emotions. It doesn't land on the body. It lands on me, on the conscious being that you are, that is always the same, that is always changeless. Then that's the aham. That's a jnanavritti. Your recognition of yourself is with you. You who are Brahman, right? You who are never changing. The practical walking around, talking, thinking, I'm doing that, that's all mitya. There's no one inside who thinks that's me. Right? That's the natural identification. As long as the body is here, the body enjoys consciousness. As long as it enjoys me. As long as the sense organs are here, they enjoy me. As long as the thoughts are here, they enjoy me. But I'm always free of them. And so my being, what shines as me, is me. It's not that before knowledge, the body shines as you. The mind shines as you. After knowledge, you shine as you. The mind shines as the mind. The sense organs as the sense organs. The body is the body. When that's the case, then Shankara says, this madbhavam saha adigachati, then he attains me. It's not an attainment in terms of doing, it's an attainment in terms of jnanam. You recognize yourself, and that self that you recognize is Ishwara, it's Bhagavan. It's your being is, the being of Ishwara is the being of Jibbeth. It's the being of Tibi, it's the being of any, it's the being of all beings. All beings have this one being, which is me. And so having, not only are you freed from the janma, mrityu, jara, dukkha, the birth and death and old age and dukkha, these things are there. The body is born, the body dies. The body grows old. The mind goes through whatever it goes through. Dukkha or sorrow or agitation or happiness or joy, whatever moods can go through the mind, dullness or agitation or being very sattvic. The guna is passing through. The jnani doesn't care. Does not care. It's not about that. It's not about what thoughts are going through the mind. It's about you, who you are in all of that. Okay, but I want to make sure this other verse covers this before I go on about that. So let's stop there with this verse. Let's go on to the next one. Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna uvacha, karlingas tringunan etan, karlingas tringunan etan, atito bhavati prabho, atito bhavati prabho, kimachara katan chaitan, tringunan ati varatate, tringunan ati varatate, kaihi lingaihi tring gunan etan atitaha bhavati prabho, kim acharaha katam cha etan trin gunan ativartate. Here Arjuna Uvacha. Here Arjuna asks a question. He asked this question in near the end of chapter 2. Now he's coming again. He asked it one other place, and I don't know if it was in chapter 6. I don't remember exactly. Twice he's asked this kind of question. So how do you walk? How do you talk? This type of question. So here he says, Kaihi lingaihi. By which lingas, trin gunan etan, these, so kaihi lingaihi, for the Sanskrit people, this is instrumental plural, kaihi lingaihi, by which lingas, by which attributes, by which qualities. A linga is something, you can take a quality or an attribute. A linga is something that denotes a person, or if somebody has these characteristics, it's like a characteristic. By what are the characteristics that would make me see, recognizing a person, you know, who's gone beyond the gunas. So that's what he says exactly. Kaihi lingaihi. By which characteristics, you know, how would I recognize? What are the characteristics? How would I recognize? Gunan etan, trin gunan etan, these three gunas. Atitaha bhavati, the one who has become free of, beyond, the one who has become one who is beyond, atitaha bhavati, he becomes. How can I tell that someone's gone beyond these gunas? Hey Prabhu, Lord. So Bhagavan, how can I tell, how can I recognize a person who's gone beyond these gunas? Kim acharaha, how do they act? How do they behave? What's their conduct? Kimacharaha. And then he says, and what is it when he says, Etan Trin Gunan Ativartate? How do they do it? How do they get beyond them, three gunas? What goes on there? How does that happen? And having happened, how do they act? What do they look like? What are the lingas? What are the characteristics that would make me recognize such a person? And how do they behave? You know, and how is it that they did that in the first place? How did they get beyond that? So these are Arjuna's questions. Bhagavan is going to answer these three questions. He'll answer them only as two. He takes these three, the first two he takes together, like this one, Kim Acharaha, how does he act and what are the characteristics? He does that together. And then he explains later, how does he go beyond them? So let's just do this. This one verse, this is such a beautiful verse, this 22. This is how Bhagavan answers it. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prakashan Chakravittincha, Prakashan Chakravittincha, Moham Eva Chapandava, Moham Eva Chapandava, Edveshti Sampravrittani. Nidveshti sampravrittani nanivrittani kankshati nanivrittani kankshati prakasham cha. So Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, prakasham cha pravrittim cha pravrittim cha moham eva cha pandava nidveshti sampravrittani nanivrittani kankshati. First he says these three things, prakasha. Prakasha means light or luminosity. It's a word for sattva. When the mind is very clear, it's very light, it's luminous, it's full of tejas, it's shining brightly, it's prakasha. So when it's light and clear, you know, like a clean mirror reflecting the sun, it's light and clear, that's prakasha. Pravritti means rajas. Pravritti is mean I'm impelled into action, I'm going towards, or activity is pravritti. Pravritti and nivritti go together, I'm going towards something or I'm going away from something. Pravritti and nivritti is just the other side of pravritti, positive, negative. Pravritti comes from kama, from desire. If I have a desire is what evokes the pravritti and the nivritti. And so desire creates, and desire itself is rajas, but The desire creates agitation because when the pravritti or nivritti comes, I'm not okay right now just as I am. I need to do something, right? I need to accomplish something. And so now the shanti, not for jnani, but for the shanti can go because it's karma born. I need this in order to be happy. That's the template for pravritti and nivritti. For an ajnani, is not, for ajnani, it's I need this, I want this, or I don't need this, and I don't like this, I don't want this. But your ananda is not at stake. I can have preferences, but then my ananda is not at stake, so if I don't fulfill my preference, it's fine. That's the huge difference. It's not that there's not preferences, it's that the preference or the absence of preference or the nivritti, if it's there, it's there. My ananda is not at stake. That is not true for samsari. So here, the pravritti nivritti, right? And whether the pravritti, that's the rajas, or the moha. Moha is just that delusion, that confusion, or I don't know what's going on, or I have no clarity around dharma or adharma. Or it can just be sleepiness or tiredness. That's also tamas. So he uses these three examples for Setra, Rajas, and Tamas. He says Prakasha, Pravritti, and Moha. Hey Pandava. These three. Nadveshti, some Pravrittani. When these three come forward, whether it be the Prakasha, everything is luminous, I'm shining with Ananda, and all is well, my knowledge, I'm shining with knowledge and Tejas, everything is light and beautiful. When that comes, fine. I don't have no dvaishti, there's no dislike of it. But when the pravritti comes also, that's fine. There's also no dvaishti. Dvaishti means I don't want that, I don't like that. You know, where I want to get rid of that. The dvaishti's not there either. The pravritti comes, the moha comes, the delusion comes, the dullness comes, the tiredness comes, the yawning comes. There's no dvaishti. When these gunas arise, they arise. There's nobody inside saying, I have now become, you know, now I'm happy because I'm sattva. The sattva guna has come. Now I'm so happy, you know. The rajas guna has come. Oh no, the rajas guna has come. The agitation, this agitation or irritation has come. Or this discomfort has come, irritability has come. Oh, now I've become irritable. Oh no, no, no. I have a dvaishti, I don't want that to be there. The tamas is come, oh, how can I become so dull? How can I feel so tired? How can I just feel like nothing is clear? Oh my God, tamas has come, oh no, no, no. He says, nadvaishti sam pravrittani, when these gunas come in the mind, and they arise, there's nobody saying, oh no, no, no. Don't let this happen to me. They're gunas. They're gunas. The mind is capable of all of these. The mind can be tamasic. The mind can be rajasic. The mind can be filled with sattva. It's the mind. It's not me. Now, the thing is, when you say that, both sides have to be aproksha. Aproksha means if I say, oh, it's the tamoguna. It's the tamoguna, that's fine. It's not me. When I say it's not me, it's because it's not me, and the me that I am is self-evident, right? If I am recognized there clearly in the vritti, I'm neither sattva, rajas, or tamas. I'm always the same, actually. And so when these gunas are passing through, otherwise, again, this is so important because we have... I was going to say delusions. I don't know what the best word to be is. We have expectations, false expectations. Like say, now when you have self-knowledge, when you become a mahatma, when you become, all right, so say we're moving from self-knowledge now to a mahatma, to an enlightened being, the only guna that will exist for you and for your antakarna is the sattva guna. And that means from this time on, once you really are a liberated being, you will be walking sattva. You will be the walking sattva guna. That is not true. That is not true. The upadhi will continue to go through the thing that will go through whatever it goes through, what is beautiful about it is that your being is always the same. And there's no buildup on what the mind is going through. Like, say your mind is feeling down. Mind is feeling down. There's nobody in there coming in and saying, oh, I'm feeling down, and I'm feeling down because this has happened, and this person did this to me, and, you know, maybe it was all my childhood problems or whatever, you know. That I'm building up a whole web around whatever the guna is. What if I don't build up any web? What if it's fine for this guna to be here? What if it's fine for the Rajas guna to be here? What if it's nice for the Sattva guna to be here? So say there's no dveshti. Means dveshti means this disregard or this dissing or hatred of the gunas as they're coming and going. So as they're, samvritani means as they arise. Nidveshti, there's nobody in there that hates that. And nanivritani kanchati. And also, there's no one who hates their coming, and there's no one also that wants them to go. There's no desire for nivritti. Oh, Rajas has come, it's got to go, it's got to go. Tamas has come, it's got to go, it's got to go. Or I want the sattva to come. This type of thinking isn't there, because the mind's attachment, the mind's attachment is to the ananda of the self. The ananda, the wholeness of the self, and that isn't coming and going. So now, this is the thing. In the midst of these gunas, in the midst of these experiences, are you there or not? And if you are there, if you are there, you are there. But has the mind discerned that? Because if the mind has discerned that, the ananda and the wholeness is all is ever present, no matter what the guna is. And so if the aham is with, if the aham, the me, is with the self is constant. And I'm not trying for jnani. You're not trying to make the universe constant. Anything in the universe. You're not trying to make it be what it's not being. You allow the mind to be the mind, but the difference is what you're freed from is building, is all of the build-up. You know? Say you have a sorrowful thought. Okay, sorrowful thought passes through. The sorrowful thought is passing through. There's nobody inside that's rejecting that sorrowful thought, or saying, I shouldn't have the sorrowful thought, or saying, so-and-so has caused the sorrowful thought. You're just, that sorrowful thought is there. But my ananda, my well-being, is not at stake. And so this build-up that causes, you know, all of the pain is not there. And it's not there because your mind is not functioning in that way anymore, because your ananda is not at stake. And so the gunas are there, the changes are there, without the buildup that's caused by the ajnana. To kind of, you know, let's see if this is the right thing to say. I'll just throw this out. You have to make a little jump. But you know, in the tenth man story, when the tenth man, because of the ignorance of the tenth man, thinks that the tenth man has been drowned in the river. There is a whole reality that has builds up around that. The tenth man has drowned in the river, and then all kinds of vrittis are going to come off of that. Like, it's my fault because I'm the leader, and who was that tenth man anyway? And everybody's going to be so upset. And what have I done? What has happened? How could have this been avoided? There's a whole world of vrittis that build up around this ajnana vritti that the tenth man is missing. You know, it's true here too. When I don't know myself, when the identification of my being is with whatever the guna happens to be, or whatever the thought happens to be, then I become that, and that becoming, now that I am that creates a slew of vrittis a slew of thoughts, you know, that are generated around that. Now, if the state of mind, say the sattva-guna, if the sattva-guna is there, that is very pleasing. And so I will have a state, that will produce a lot of vrittis around that, like oh, this is it's so nice to have this clarity, and this is such a beautiful experience, or whatever you do, and now I'm not able to keep it, and I see that it's slipping away. I have a whole world going on around it. If I have a dukkha vritti, a whole world of vrittis are produced by my identification with that vritti. What if I don't have an identification with it? What if it's only a vritti? What if it's only sattva or rajas or tamas? And it's not me. And I am present in exactly the same way. Then I just simply do not have the same relationship with the thoughts that are coming through, or with the world for that matter, because they're not threatening to me. And so for the jnani, it's not about the vrittis that you're having. It's about who you are in the midst of those vrittis. The vrittis are not the problem. The sattva, rajas, and tamas is not the problem. It's my lack of self-knowledge, who I am amidst those vrittis, that is the problem. So the jnani doesn't really care about the vrittis. It doesn't care sattva, rajas, tamas, doesn't happy thoughts, sad thoughts. It doesn't really matter, because the self is free. The self is the ananda. And so this is so different. This is very different understanding, because otherwise what we're trying to do is produce one set, only the sattva vrittis, and we can't stand the other ones. But that's not true for a jnani. All of the whole fabric, it's like salt and pepper, you know, all of the spices, all of them make up life, and they're no threat to you because your self is shining there stably. Now, interestingly, when Swamiji writes his commentary on this, you know what he says? This is true and very discernible, but unless you have a lot of inner child work to do. Means when there are a lot of, you know, hurts and complexes, childhood hurts and complexes inside. He says, just like this, he has only a few lines, one little paragraph on this. He says, what happens then is that those inner child, you know, traumas and scars and hurts, they create such intense feelings in the mind, you know, that those feelings are so overwhelming that we need to learn how to deal with them and come into relationship with them in order to release them from all of that pain. I'm saying that a little more than he said. You know? And then once we take care of some of these hurts, the inner child hurts, you know, then this becomes very simple, because the mind isn't loaded with pain. You know, dukkha is that you have dukkha, but it's not loaded with a tremendous intensity of childhood trauma. So when we have that childhood trauma, we have to learn how to be with it in a way that allows it to the intensity of those feelings that are held inside, to allow those to release. And it has to do with love, it has to do with understanding, it has to do with reparenting, you know, to allow those little ones that were so traumatized, you know, to have somebody inside that loves them. It's all they ever needed in the first place, it's all anybody ever needs. You know, the parents fail all the time, but if the parents are loving and hold you in great esteem, as the most important little being in the universe, you know, you're held by your parents as the most important, most beautiful, most perfect little being in the universe, you'll be fine. Okay, but parents fail at that to one degree or another. Everybody does. But some fail a lot. And when there's a lot of failure, then there's a lot of healing that has to be done, because there's a tremendous amount of childhood hurt inside. They all have hurt inside. Some people have a lot more hurt inside than other people. So whatever we're bringing to the table, it's okay. We have, because there's a way to deal with it. And the way to deal with it is to learn how to go inside and be with all of those little ones in a way where they feel loved. That they feel loved and cared for. And then that trauma can start releasing itself. Trauma, hurt, and pain that we're carrying inside, you know, it transforms when it's allowed to express itself in the presence of someone who cares. Like if I'm crying my eyes out and it's in the front of somebody who loves me, like imagine a little child has been hurt. It's crying its eyes out and so hurt and so upset, but is sitting on mother's lap. Who just stay on father's lap. He just stays with that child until it all washes out. That's fine. But imagine that little child crying its eyes out and nobody is there. It's just by itself. That isn't fine. You know? And so we can cry and cry and cry as adults. We get triggered, this inner pain gets triggered, but unless we can come and be with it, we can find that part of ourselves, that kind of the guru inside or the good parent inside, to hold it, then it's not really transformative, it's just more tears, it's just re-traumatizing. And so we have to learn about that and learn how to be inside with our hurts and our pains and our traumas in a way that those parts of us can actually heal and release all of that pain. It's very, very important, because otherwise what's happening is it just gets re-triggered and re-triggered and re-triggered. It's not like it runs out of gas. It just endlessly re-triggers unless you're able to be with it in a way that is transformative. So Swamiji says a few words about that, actually. Because that pain is so much, it's hard when you're in that much pain, you know, to say these are only the gunas. Yeah. I remember once when I was first at with Swamiji in India, and of course it started, and I was understanding to some degree. You know, it was pretty new in the course, but I remember crying my eyes out when I'm sitting on the bed in my little cot there in my room, crying my eyes out, thinking, "Who cares about Brahman? What Brahman? What self? What difference does it make when I'm in this kind of agony or this kind of pain? Who cares?" And that's what it's like. That's when big stuff is coming up and you're having to deal with. It trumps, can be so powerful, it trumps your knowledge. And so that being the case, we need to know how to, psychologically, we need to have the psychological tools to help with that, you know, to release all of that pain. It's very important, you know. Anyway, that's good enough. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Harihi Om.
Are the doers, right? So when a sattvic, it's pretty easy to objectify that I'm being acted upon by gunas. It's sattvic.
Well, if it's sattva, I would say when it's sattva, your mind is very kind of pleased and happy, and
right. So it's easy to be objectify it. Yeah. But when it's taken over by tamas or rajas, it's a lot more difficult to be objective.
Only if there's actually. That's true when there's stuff inside charging your mind. When there's a lot of unconscious material charging the mind, then it's hard because it's like a big emotion. Right? But if it's not being charged, if you're not being charged by unconscious material, then anger can be there, but you can also blow it away. It's not a big deal. Tamas can be there, but you can blow it away. In the sense that it's not overwhelming. It's when the rajas is there and tamas is there in a way that is overwhelming, it's not that easy to blow it away. I got it. You see what I mean? Because it's big, it's overwhelming. You just think of yourself. Sometimes your sattva can be an irritant. That's rajas. Sometimes you really want to do something. You're driven to do something. That's rajas. You know? Sometimes you feel just dull and out of it. That's tamas. It's not a big deal. It's easy to say that's tamas. That's rajas.
Yeah,
right?
I think I'm trying to understand it in how not to get overwhelmed with the unconscious material.
That's the inner child book. It's the inner, that's the inner child work. When there's an overwhelm there, then we change gears. Because when that overwhelm is there, then the thing to say is to go inside and say, what's really hurting me? What's really making me angry? Tell me about it. When you start doing, actually going in and being with the ones inside. And that takes some skill and some knowledge, because what we're used to doing until we understand this is, if, say, you're angry and it's charged, but you'll just blame the other person because the source, the reason for the anger is totally projected outside. You don't even know to go inside. That skill's not there. That kind of knowledge isn't there. But once you do have that knowledge, then when you have a big reaction or a big feeling, you know, that has overwhelm, then you know, you take that, you know, as a signal. It's like somebody inside is raising up their hand. And you know to go in and see what's really bothering me. Like, you can feel really angry at this other person, and at the same time you can say, what's really wrong here? What's really bothering me?
Won't it be too complicated to figure out?
Not necessarily, because it would be more like this. It's not really that you have to figure it out, because this is all feelings. If you go inside, say something's really upsetting you, and then you go inside and you ask what's really bothering you, your psyche will tell you. You know? It doesn't have to be that complicated. You let it talk with you. You know, you do that. That's the inner child work, where you ask. You know, it's kind of ask and you'll receive. The psyche will really, really talk to you if you ask. You know, and if you ask with kindness, if you ask with anger or criticism, just like in the world, if somebody asks you something with anger or criticism, you just automatically shut down. You don't even have to try. You just do. So if you approach your own psyche that way, the little ones inside, with anger or criticism or impatience, they'll just shut down. Because they don't want to be hurt anymore. So it's only if you come as a friend, as somebody who really cares and wants to help, you know, that those parts will open up. I think one of the things about Swamiji, he's such a huge heart. But what is so incredible about him is that He is so much only wants to help. He doesn't have it, there's nothing else inside. You just, you know, it's there, that love is there for you, who you are, and that, and what's the problem? You know, how can, you know, there's no one inside that is attacking. And when that's the case, there's such a safety. You yourself, even on the conscious, physical person, as well as the unconscious, the whole person, you know, is able to grow and to change because there's somebody who sees you in the best possible light. And anything else, that's just, you know, we'll get rid of that. You know, do that and we'll work on that, we'll work on that. But that's not who he's relating to. You can't fake that type of thing. He's so much that way that when you're in his presence, you become your best self. You recognize the goodness of your own self because he sees that so fully, you know. That's why it's so wonderful to be around a Mahatma like that, or somebody who's so mature. You know, with Swamiji, when he's walking around the ashram, I feel the trees are all lighting up. All the animals are lighting up. Everybody's enjoying that ananda of somebody who has such...
Some of the Indian paintings, the old paintings, they have the deer come and the birds come.
Yeah, everybody comes.
Yeah, the lilies point to mm-hmm. him.
But yeah, because those are all the, you know, the gunas here. Guna has a lot of meanings. Guna means the three gunas, but it also means good qualities. You know, those are the gunas of the Mahatma. They should show it that way. All the animals are coming, and there's a halo over him, and all this kind of stuff. Those are the good qualities. Guna also means any quality. So if you look up the word guna in the Sanskrit dictionary, you get a three or four columns of meaning. You have to become a Swami like Swamiji to the little ones inside in order for them to be able to heal, to grow. And they will. They'll all start changing and, you know, as they're given safety.
Well, what if they don't? What if you're not good enough in being kind to them, or you're not a good, adequate parent to the little ones?
Then you learn how to be an adequate parent. You just slowly learn how to do that.
You know, succeed at that.
You don't always succeed at it. Succeed. Nobody always succeeds, but in turn, it's a lot easier once you learn how to be a good parent to the ones inside. That's a much easier task than being a good parent to the real kids outside. You know, it maybe takes a little practice, because you also have to learn to recognize the mean father, you know, or the critical voice. The critical voice, you also have to learn how to talk to that one and talk to the critical mother, the critical father.
So when you're teaching, is that what you imparted to your students, the ability to do that?
Yeah. I hope so. We all have to learn that.
We all try.
Trying is fine. The thing is that you have to know that there's something to try. You have to know there's something to try, right? Or you don't even know about this. It's not as though, and these are things that need to be taught, you know? And when we do guided meditations, inner child, we haven't done that for a while, but we have done a lot of that.
My son just got some bad news today, and he's talking to me about it, and he goes like, I'm just cursed, you know, like having that idea that somehow you're, oh, that's what he said.
What was the bad news?
Oh, that he...
You don't have to tell me.
It's okay. Yeah. Some past deeds that he had done prevented him from realizing something that he was...
Wanted to do.
That he had tried very hard to do and then had succeeded, and then this thing from the past came back and they called him and said, no, you did that thing back then, and now you can't.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
And he's that's so disappointed, and he just feels like that's what happens to me. That's how it is. You know, I'm saying, no, it's not like that, you know, but how to get past that place.
That's disappointing.
Yeah. So,
it's 50-50. Bad things happen. Hard, really, you know, it's not just for him in life, for all of us. There are little bad things that happen, but there's some big ones too for all of us. There are some big disappointments, big things that happen, and this is one of those for him.
Yeah.
And
from my perspective, it's, oh well, life is long and
yeah.
Other things will happen, and maybe it's really
that, that's right, but when it's happening, it's hard to say that.
I know, and it just sounds like so
Mama
dribble.